January 22, 2021, is the Wafa Bingo Show.
Thank you.
Wofford Pedro Show. Happy Friday. Brother Matt at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point a couple miles south because still quit quarantino mode, but I'm not totally man alone. Good people, because those engineers with their software in Estonia and their righteous Skype invention. I got Mr. Jeff Pincus with me. Hey, Brother Jeff. Where are you talking to me from?
I'm talking to you from Asheville, North Carolina. Okay. Just west of Asheville. Kind of up in Pillbilly Hill next to Meth Mountain.
Yeah. I think I-40, there's a kind of a treacherous path there on the interstate between Tennessee.
Man, yes, there is. And I came up to Georgia with my F-150 with a 5,000-pound trailer with no trailer brakes in the rain coming over the hills, coming from Georgia, Young Harris coming up that way. And my wife was in the RV behind me with the dogs, and it's an old 73 with, you know, no disc brakes. And she was screaming at the top of her lungs, why, because I wouldn't slow down. She didn't know I had my foot all the way to the floor on the brakes. It was just pushing me down a hill, man. But that was like the last 60 miles of our journey. We moved out here in May right after all this COVID stuff happened. Okay. We were already planning on moving out, but it just delayed our trip a little bit.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you made it safe. Because, you know, I've been in it with the fog heavy.
Oh, yeah. I guess, and they call it the Smokies for a reason out here.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Dollywood ain't that far.
No, not at all, man. That's about an hour and a half away from where I'm at.
Yeah. So, we start off the show with John Coltrane with Duke Ellington doing Stevie. We got to thank Stevie Bono for making the connect here.
Sweet, yeah, of course. I love Stevie, man. Yeah, he's a funny guy, man.
Right, absolutely. He's doing drums these days.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
I heard some of the stuff he was working on, but it sounded like Drum Machine at the time. maybe he's just that good. I don't know.
Okay. And then we had J.D. Pincus, Pissing Dirty. And I guess that's your most recent, where you're doing like the banjo. And
That's my solo banjo. That's my first album. That one's off of. It's probably gotten the most hits off of Spotify. Probably like 20. No, I'm kidding. That's it. I think the name Pissing Dirty interests people more than the song. Who knows, man?
I think it's a great song.
Thanks.
Do you have a Bandcamp? Because that's where people can really reward you.
I do. I have a J.D. Pincus Bandcamp with stuff from a few projects on it that if people are interested in what they hear or whatever, they can come shop if they want and say hi. I respond to the stuff, and the spelling's all wrong, but I do respond.
That's okay. Pettibone ain't good at spelling either, but he's great at concepts. You know, I was reading about somebody was saying, I don't know, $50 for like a million Spotify plays.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I mentioned the Bandcamp. Look, let's talk about your journey in music. What's your earliest musical recollection, Jeff?
My earliest recollection would probably be, I don't know, I imagine, you know, being here in AM radio is probably everybody's, you know, like driving, you know, when we had in the car with the folks playing music while we're driving. And, you know, just like when everyone first got a TV, everyone's going to use it. So, you know, it's captive audience. But that's what I first remember hearing. And then my sister was real musical. She's a preacher now, pastor in North Georgia, and she used to play piano and sing all the time. She actually got we were in Georgia, and she went to Valdosta, the governor's honors program, because of her piano playing. And also she spoke French in Georgia, which I tried to do as well, but I figured out I was just only in it for the cheese. But I must have heard Bridge Over Troubled Water a million times, and Leave On by Elton John. But I would probably like to think that because of my sister always banging on a fairly, not a honky-tonk tune piano, it was fairly well tuned, that my ears got, you know, fairly well in pitch when I was a kid. You know, I still couldn't sing to save my life. I still can't, but I figured out for singing, the trick is, it's not, the people started telling me I was a better singer. It's not that I'm a better singer. I started realizing that I can't sing in every key. Being a musician, you want to write a song in every key, but you forget that you got to sing on top of it. Mm. And man, that can put a whooping on you.
Yeah. Well, so you grew up in the pad. There was a piano. So you grew up with musical instruments in the pad.
Yeah. My sister, my folks weren't really musical, although I hear my dad played saxophone when he was younger. But you know, he was all listening to talk radio, logic major, trig teacher, all that stuff. But having the piano in the house was the start. And then we got acoustic guitars. And I remember I didn't like learning Puff the Magic Dragon because I didn't realize how cool of a song it actually was at the time. And so I fired my teacher, I guess, at the tender age of probably 8 or 9 or something. And then I picked up an electric guitar that my sister traded both of our acoustics for. And then I got turned on to bass guitar, probably the tender age of about 11, at Rhythm City in Atlanta. And I got a Fender Mustang bass, which I really wish I still had. And I had a bass amp that was actually, I think, a guitar amp, but it was from one of the guys from Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Oh, wow.
From Rhythm City in Atlanta. But I remember just like, you know, the first time I played the bass and I felt that in my stomach and I was like, whoa, this is where I'm at. And I grew up down the street from a band called Mother's Finest.
Oh, yeah, I remember them.
Oh, they're still around.
And, yeah, sure.
Yeah, Dion, their son, now plays drums for them. But what an amazing band it was. And I think that's kind of where, like, I got the rock groove. They kind of took Zeppelin riffs and added, made them a little funkier. It was late 70s or whatever. But that was, you know, I went to school with Dion, and my friend lived next door to him and stuff. So a lot of that kind of groove rock stuff was big, you know, for me growing up. You know, hearing that kind of stuff, I really got into that. Where it was heavy bass driven, you know, music. If you get into the AC/DC and you know, stuff, which, you know, my friend said about AC/DC, he goes, I still buy every single record. I don't want them to reinvent the wheel. I just want them to play that same song over and over again. And, it's like my ex-father-in-law used to call it dumb eights on the bass, you know, dum 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 dum. And so I always thought about that, but I was always more into the Mother's Finest grooves or, you know, bands where everything was syncopated, you know, with drums and the bass played against each other.
Parted out.
Yeah, the stoner rock thing where the bass, guitar, and drums all play the same riff over and over again. I hear so many other melodies going on when someone plays me these tracks, and I wish that they had like a horn section or somebody that could like pick up the slack and fill in the gaps.
Sure, or like some counter moves. Can I ask you about school? Were you in the marching band or choir or shit like that?
No, man, I wasn't in any of that. Well, actually, when I was in third grade, I played the French horn because no one else wanted to play it. And
do you know about another bass player that played French horn?
Who's that?
John Entwistle. There's a bass French horn solo in Pictures of Lily done by him.
Oh shit, man! I didn't know that was him. That's funny, man. Yeah, nobody in my we got into the auditorium and at the school, and then everybody was sitting around trumpet and trombone. And my sister spoke French, so I saw French horn. I was like, oh, I guess no one wants to do that. I'll do that. And so I sat there, and I kind of learned a little bit about that and a little bit of viola, I guess, around that time. I tried that out. I'm sure I tortured my parents with that for however few months I tried.
You know who's good on viola is Spot, the producer.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a little larger violin. And the French horn, what I heard about the... They're tricky because they got a weird mouthpiece. It's kind of tiny.
Yeah, I have no idea. I just remember I was in a class and my neighbor Steve Chesson was playing trombone, which seemed a lot trickier to me because there were no buttons, you know?
That's right. But it's bass clef, and it's got a big-ass mouthpiece.
Yeah, and so my teacher, who was like probably, you know, 22 at the time, I don't know, we were in third grade, and I remember the teacher going, okay, everybody play a D, And so we went down the line, everybody tried to hit a D, and he got to my friend Steven on the trombone. I don't know what note he hit, probably it was like an H sharp or something. And he goes, no, D. And he missed it again. He goes, D, D is in dumbass. And I was like, wow, this is a really tough class, man.
Look, Jeff, I want to play Still a Bitch.
All right.
ワインの赤が開けることのない夜みたいだった。 Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. That was J.D. Pincus, Man Alone, with the banjo and singing. Still a bitch. Then we had something brand new from Deuce Drone. This is out of Belfast, Northern Ireland. Pete Fire Flame. Then Model Home out of D.C., brand new album. It's a bitching album. And Mechanics of Functionality, Bombas Prendon, from old days around the D.C. area, Malmwood Swings. Elmo Kirkwood, this Kirk Kirkwood's son, who's actually, yeah, the youngest guy in the Meat Puppets. Family affair, huh? And they got Derek Bostrom back, by the way. 1964 Ever. Gareth Sager from the pop group has got a new piano. Saxophone duet. Miniature 01. And Nilsson from Hermano Milo in Barcelona. Who is coming? That's in the translation. The last. Okay, here's the mystery album that no one ever got to hear. It just came out. And he just floated to me. Should I say a word? Just another girl. Foodie from Osaka with Pierce Hole and Wine's Red. What the fuck? Dustin Wong with New Ways at Traveling. And finally, J.D. Pincus with Happy Cow. I remember, what was that band? San Diego Beet Farmers. They had one. I'm a happy boy. When I was thinking the happy cow, I'm a happy boy. You know. And so Jeff, so you get on the bass, man, and you're into Mother Finest, and they had some. There's some good bass. They ain't all unison. Yeah, you're right. You listen to Geezer Butler, and you listen to the way he works it with Bill Ward.
Yeah.
And Tony Iommi. Yeah, it ain't like same old, same old. They're like fucking dueling, a little sword fight.
Yeah, I think, Tim Boger, rest in peace, he just passed away.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I was always, like the cactus stuff, and like some of my favorite stories of him and Jim McCarty getting into fist fights after shows because he was soloing over Jim Solo. That's when you know you're in a band, man. I'm not going to be in another band until I can fist fight with everyone.
So what was the first band you played bass in?
Oh, shoot, man. I think it was a band called Mr. Ed. Literary guy that was really book smart in Atlanta, and I ended up in his band called Drowning in the Fountain. And then there was one called The Proles, which was probably one of my last later bands. I think we wanted to be like CCR or something like that. So we played that at 88 and Margaritaville.
Steve May, 688 Club.
Oh, yeah.
Ig had his set list painted on the bulkhead.
Yeah. And I remember there was a rock out back that had that Zappa painted on it that said, "Help, I'm a rock."
That's the mother song, right?
Yeah.
Help, I'm a rock. Help, I'm... So you joined the Butts. How'd that happen? Because they, we played their first Hollywood gig, Minuteman, with them and the Big Boys at Grandy Room. And they had some cat they called Eskimo. I think his name might have been Quinn or something.
Yeah, Quinn, yeah. He's in San Antonio still, I think.
Okay.
Really nice guy. He played in the band called Marching Plague. They went through about 13 bass players.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Before I was in the band. And I outlasted all of them put together and then took 12 years off. And then came back, I guess, technically, to play some shows. But they had quite a history with, exploding bass players, and that's why I thought it was going to be one of them. I don't know. But what happened was they ended up in Georgia. The guy, Trevor Malcolm, who was playing right before me,
he was the sunglasses guy, right, in the video.
Yeah, the tuba player. He was only in the band for like 6 months. I guess Corey Rusk and Lisa Rusk at Touch and Go kind of hooked him up with the band. And he came down with a stolen tuba from a high school that he got in trouble for later because it was a video.
Corey was a bass man for Necros.
Yeah, sure. It definitely was, man. And so, so he left because I guess when they were in Athens, I was in Atlanta at the time, you know, doing my thing, and they were in Athens, and they were actually outside of Athens in Winterville. And where Winterville was, there was nothing there, so there was no, it wasn't easy to get food. They didn't have any, according to them, they didn't have any, you know, furniture.
Can I ask you, cause Mike Azarod in his book said that Gibb was driving around with, like, Mike Stipe, I want to smoke your pipe.
The hype, I still want to suck your big long pipe.
That's true?
Well, I personally was not there for that one, so I'm gonna leave that one to you judge for yourself. But I'll tell you that, just I gotta give a shout out to a guy named James Burns, who wrote an actual story about Butthole Surfers that's as about as true as I've seen. That other guy that you mentioned, he never talked to a single one of us, and there was stuff in there that was definitely not the way I remembered anything or who said whatever or anything like that. But I do say James Burns' book, if anybody actually wants to know the history of the Butthole Surfers, I mean, as he laughed before, I described it as Leviticus. It's like, and then God, this bass player, and this bass player died and begot this. I mean, it's very, very exact on dates. And yeah, it's a true thing. But yeah, those guys ended up in Atlanta after they left without a bass player, and they had a tour going on in Europe that they wanted a bass player for. And somebody, actually the fellow in Daddy Longhead, Jim Young, was at the Metroplex when they were down there. And he recommended me. It was at the new Metroplex, not the old one on Lucky Street. Yeah, it was the bigger one at Marietta Street. Yeah, Lucky Street was the one that I'm sure you probably played that one. I remember seeing a bunch of bands. We always got everybody from the West Coast about 4 years later. But I just saw a Circle Jerks poster from '83. I think that was probably the first time they came through. but it was at the old one, you know. But yeah, so anyways, they invited me to come over and jam with them at a warehouse in downtown Atlanta in Five Points, and I came down and played.
Five Points. There was a great club called that for a while.
Well, there's Five Points and Little Five Points.
Little Five Points. You're right.
That was one that was invented by hippies in the 70s. Five Points is the one that's by Underground Atlanta. It's a little bit seedier down that way.
What's it called? Earl? The Earl?
The Earl's Austin, East Atlanta. Okay. That's kind of where nobody ever went when I was growing up.
Muscle Shoal Road or something.
Yeah. That was kind of no go land. There was a couple of weed dealers I knew out there, but that's
okay. So look, you got the gig. In fact, you ended up on one of the covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty photogenic. I guess you didn't know that.
You're the hairway to Steven.
Yeah, Hairway to Steven, which was a name Gibby came up with. I remember he was passed out in the back of the van, and he popped his head up. I think we were crossing the Canadian border at that time, and he came up out of a stupor and just goes, "Hairway to Steven," and then put his head back down. That kind of just ended up in the album, which is, I think the one before that, we just threw a sock at the keyboard, and it came up with P-I-O-U-G-H.
Yeah, right. Paul just came out with a record.
Yeah, it's badass. As Dale from the Melvins just told me last night, he goes, it's like a children's record for adults.
Yeah, it's really good. Well, I've only heard one tune, but I really liked it.
It's really good, yeah.
He was helping out these other people. You know, he's been doing a lot of producing and stuff, but...
Well, he's taking a break from a lot of that, and he had his computer kind of melt down on his solo record, and so, you know, he changes his mind quite a bit about things, but the last he told me was that because the computer went down, he was going to call it quits. That was it.
Because I had him on the show. He was helping these other people out making an album, and he was like, man, I'm into this producing thing. I don't want to tour anymore.
Well, it may seem like I say he changes his mindset.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour. January 22, 2021, Dish Wap Pedro Show special guest, Jeff Pincus. Hold tight for hour two. January 22, 2021. Second hour of the Wapa Pedro Show.
Further than that, she ran off Whoa, is it you?
tell one story though about us from when we were together during the butthole times when we were touring.
Yeah.
That might be something to touch on.
Yeah, you're talking about with the bass head.
Oh no, I wasn't even talking about that. You said some things to me that lasted with me for a while. Are we going right now? I remember the first time you saw me play. I think it was we played together at in L.A. I'm trying to think of, was it the Variety Arts Center? Maybe
no, Perkins Palace.
Oh, okay, maybe
the,
maybe
the fucking cockroach little papers and the light and the fire and all that shit.
Well, I remember you saw me play.
Yeah.
And you came up to me and you go, "You ain't no bass player," and I go, "What?" And you go, "You're a bass wrestler like me." And I thought that was the funniest fucking thing in the world, and the biggest compliment I could have ever gotten was from you on that one.
It was a theater, Perkins Palace. But you know what? We did play together at Variety Arts Center too, though.
Yeah, because I remember you only had one bass, and I remember you going, "I break a lot of strings. Mind if I have your bass if I break one?"
So look, I gotta tell the people what we just heard. We heard Pure Luck. I want to know about that project. Broke, Soaked, and Dirty. Before that was We Merci from Vic Dimmitt. Dimoni from Giovanni Al Topo Jean. The Heat Incorporated, Raptors. Sam Bennett from Tokyo with "What Was Me, What Was You." And then we started all off with Chum, which we know about here in Pedro, right? Chum Bucket is the bait. Daddy Longhead. Now, how did Daddy Longhead get going? Is that the prod you did right out of Buttholes?
Yeah, I was still kind of doing Butthole Surfers then, and we weren't really getting much done. There were some issues at that time, internal issues in the band, and I was really like, really lucky to be able to play with some other musicians at the time, because let me just put one point out there. For Paul has never toured without Gibby in his whole career, and you know how long those guys have been playing together.
Sure.
So for me, it's a real, really strange realization when you think about a musician that's been playing for that long, never touring with anybody else. So to me, to be able to play with other musicians, like I had Ray Washam, sure, playing drums, with a guy where I'd write a song, he goes, "Oh, that's cool, that's 7/8. And I'd go, "Really? Cool." Yeah, but I never had that before. Nobody ever called out what my time signatures were. But and Jimbo Young, who could play anything with strings or a mouthpiece or whatever. And so it was kind of like a different world of music for me. And it was kind of being as twisted as possible without using too many effects, I guess, musical signatures and weird, time change and stuff that I'm not as into now, but it was fun back then because it was such a break from doing, 3-4 beats and, so a lot of the same stuff that we did a lot of the time, with Butthole Surfers. So that's when I started doing that, and that was a hard realization that it doesn't matter what you did in the past. You're only as good as your last record and the people that are getting the word out for it. So, as much as I enjoyed playing the music, doing the business was a big life learning experience because, we never put our names on Butthole Surfers records or who wrote what or whatever, and I wasn't a starter. I didn't start the band. So it was really like, totally starting from scratch, where I thought maybe I'd have a leg up on people, but I didn't.
But I enjoy it, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I remember when it was happening too, and it was like, but I, you're a wrestler. I knew you could fucking handle anything. But
I'm a better wrestler.
Yeah, that's what I meant. But you, because there's this kind. It happens with drummers too. Like these guys are just side mice. They can't compose.
That's right.
Bullshit.
Yeah. So, and, I think the place for everybody, though, it's like my strength is not a, I'm not a jam player. I'm not someone that, I like getting into other people's heads to work on their songs, but I really, really, really dig writing songs. I really dig, like, as much control over it, and that's why the banjo is a lot of fun. because, you know, it's like when you get people together and you all compromise one idea, it gets watered down. It can't help but get watered down. There has to be a captain. You're a captain, you know. You have to.
Somebody's got to have their hand on the rudder.
Yeah, exactly. And so that to me is like, it's fun to do both. But I really get a lot of enjoyment and self-satisfaction out of being able to compose something all by myself, which is really what you've done on the bass way more successfully than me. You know, I always have to explain to other people what I'm hearing. But with the banjo and my effects, I can kind of get all those different instruments and a little percussion going from the banjo as well. So it's kind of like a way to be able to, you know, I can't play guitar worth a crap. So it's really the only thing that makes sense to me is a banjo or bass.
Well, look, you flowed me this song. You only gave me one Butthole Surfer song, and it was the Bong song.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Tell me.
Well, because that one, you said songs you played on, or were you, well, in Butthole Surfers, there was a lot of compromise. I'd come up with music and, you know, come up with some lyrics, or, you know, we'd all share stuff like that. But that song right there, King wasn't living with us at the time. And we did this album, Widowmaker, and I did the drums on my Roland drum machine, playing what I thought King would play. I played two bass tracks, did a bong hit for vocals, and and Paul did a bong hit, which, we, if anyone knows us, we had to share weed, and we were on a budget. So we always held the weed in like it was the last hit in the world. And so that song showed you how we were back in those days. We did not mess around. When you have one bud and five mouths to feed, nobody wasted a drop. So the song echoed that, and I figured that was probably the most fitting one if I was going to put one of the ones on there that was the most me, probably of any of the Butthole Surfers songs.
Okay, let's listen.
feeling like a waste of time. And everybody is on the phone, unaware the bird has flown. But I'm gonna be the death of me. And by the way, the tears are gone. I got a feeling I'm gonna be on my own. Give a shit last. Cold blood beats under that breath. Old West never wanna hurt no one. But I got my gun. More than just a Friday night. And everybody gets alone. Lost everything I thought you had. By the way, I should have known. Got a feeling I'm gonna be on my own. No rock.
Wafra Pedro Show. Yeah, the Bong Song from Butthole Surfers. That's a Jeff Pincus song, people. January's after that, Song of a Lost Self, plus one from Quiet Pig out of Italy. Moist Boys, High and Mighty. His Skull Is a Jar from Snowball's Chance in Hell. Gonna Be the Death of Me from Grand Champion. Finally, Honky with Out of Season. Now, Honky came after Daddy Longhead?
Yeah, correct. Okay. Yes.
Tell me about that.
That was a really fun project that was not supposed to be a touring band, but I liked it so much, I went against what the what one of the other guys did, and we started touring with Strove, one of my best friends, out of the band. But it was very stripped down. I just wanted to do Southern, what we call super boogie, stuff with a groove, stuff that was, when we locked in to play a groove for a second, it stood out, because most of the time we were syncopated as can be, doing some boogie woogie in our, you know, super, sped up way, I guess. And, the song you're about to play, I got to hire the guys from Brownout, Speedy, the horn player from Brownout from Texas. He used to be a Grupo Fantasma, still is, I guess. But I got the horn section, wrote this part for me. It just was some of my favorite production. That's why I gave you this song for what we did. And Paul actually mixed, this record for me.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, he was very happy because it had guitars, which is something he hadn't mixed in a while.
Yeah, but you know what? We already heard it.
There you go.
Okay, Jeff. Yeah, I loved it. I loved it, brother. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, January 22nd, 2021, with this Watt Peters for special guest Jeff Pincus. Hold tight for hour three. January 22nd, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
I'm gonna go get some more. salvation is the beauty of understanding. To know this love is the strength that keeps us strong. For the purpose of everything will have to unfold eventually. We'll have to be patient. There's always so much to do. When I look out over the ocean and the sun's beating down on the other sand, and I think about the one I love and she's so far away, things aren't turning out like I had planned. She's coming from a good family, and I was just a poor boy on the street. We fell in love at some crazy party. Isn't it strange how two paths meet? How long will it take you? How long will it take you to realize?
Money slaloms through the fingers, American spirits, guitars and strings, ever clear, once hash. Now more books, records, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, cholesterol blood work, gym membership, a strange obsession with shoes and pants, accumulations of black t-shirts, tattoos, heat pump, gutters. There is no rest from the consuming feast. They come in the mail, obsessively, minimum payment, telling me to stay in touch until death do us part, together forever. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wapapivio Show started off the third hour with another Jeff Baker's project. Ariola 51, Ted Danson, which is kind of a, not punk rock, but pun rock. And then we had a Tragic Comedy live on KPFK until realized Phil Venable, Bill's Tour de Convulse from the Trans Idio Proj, Helios Creed. Ah, yeah, that's right. You did some, you did a shift with him. Isolation Tank. Yeah, from Chrome, everybody, from the old days in the city. But tell us first about Ariola 51.
Ariola is 51 is, I like it because everyone's got one and no one knows how to spell it. And Ariola, part right around the nipple, protruding part.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, Ariola 51 is a project that Brett Bradford and Max Brody were doing a project called Sangre de Toro, and we decided we were going to record something. They wanted me to play with them, but they didn't really have a bunch of songs, and none of my songs, which I can write a song really fast, I found out, so I don't have to play other people's songs. And by the time it was done, it didn't sound like Sangre de Toro, so we called it Ariola 51. And Max Brody, he played in Euripides Pants.
Yeah, I love that name. Euripides Pants had Break Your Face.
Yeah. Euripides Pants had Ray Washam actually playing drums as well.
That's right.
And him and Ray played in Ministry. And Brett Bradford, of course, we all know from Scratch Acid.
Yep.
One of the great riff writers from bringing Sabbath riffs into punk rock.
Yeah.
I don't know how they said that.
And it's Saint Vitus too, Dave Chandler. Yeah.
Oh, totally, man. Yeah. So we got together and we did that, and then we did another record, and no one's really heard any of this stuff, but I think some, you know, we never really had anyone to put it out, and it's kind of out there, and maybe someday we'll get it out there, but I'm really proud of doing the stuff, and we did it all to 2-inch tape on the first record, and the second one was a little bit digital and passed around, so two different styles. But the first one was extremely raw and 2-inch 16 track.
Yeah, the fat bottom. So what's the connect with Helios?
Yeah, Helios, he's an interesting cat, man. The first time I played on a record with him, he had sold that record to two different people, with Tom Hazelmeyer from AMREP and who's re-releasing some of his old stuff now, and Frank Kozik. And so it ended up coming out with Kozik, and I remember Hazelmeyer's quote when I told him I apologized for being a part of it. He goes, "Oh no, I think it was like $5,000. He goes, "If it just costs me $5,000 to get Helios out of my life, I'm okay with it." So, anyways, Helios is quite the businessman, and Chrome was one of my favorite bands.
Oh yeah, Mind Bomb. It,
yeah, Half Machine Lips Moves was.
Oh yeah, that's bitchin'.
Such, like, just the way the album flows together, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You're being able to fart into a microphone and people digging it. You know, all that stuff was all on that record. And it was, you know, and I'm very happy with the stuff that I ended up getting to do with Helios. Would I want to do it again? Yeah, I don't know. Probably not.
You know, Nathan, do you know Nathan and Frank from We Are the Asteroid?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
They've got an adventure.
Yeah, well, Frank played with me on the stuff that I did.
Okay. Yeah. They opened up for Flipper with that David Yao singing.
That's right. I remember Frank saying that he hooked up with you. And you also played with my friend Cosmo down in Houston, I think.
That's right. Yeah. What about the last connect I want to get to, because we're running out of time, the Melvins, because you gave me Bright of Crankenstein.
Yeah, and I gave you Don't Forget to Breathe.
Yeah, I'm going to play both of those next chunk of music.
Right on.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah. Oh.
Wofford Pedro Show. Thank you, Rooster. We started that chunk of music off with Bride of Krankenstein, Melvins. Then we had Tim Hohouse with Rise. Down of the Double, part 404. That's Emmett Kelly and Jim White. Great cats. And then finally, Melvins with Don't Forget to Breathe. Both of Melvin tunes brought on board by Brother Jeff Pincus, and he's going to tell us about that experience.
Yeah, man. I got really lucky to be good buddies with Dale. We played his band Altamont, a band Honky played tours together. And back when he was married to Lori, I think her name is, from Acid King. And then later on, we ended up, I joked with him about being being rhythm based for him at some point in time. And halfway joking, because of course I'd love to play with him. And the opportunity, I was down actually in Houston recording with a guy named Meganut. Do you know Meganut, Lonnie Marshall?
Absolutely. A weapon of choice.
But,
great. He plays the Steinberger and shit. Great bass
player. Yeah, butt naked. And also he has a rubber band. Because I was down recording some songs he didn't want to do in Houston with my friend Carson from Hawkey's project called Neptune's Harem. And so I was down there, and I get a phone call from Buzz, and he goes, "Hey, man." And he doesn't call unless there's something that's going on. And he goes, "Hey, man. So, I was wondering if Honky would be able to play on a Melvins tour." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, sure, man." I didn't even talk to the guy. I said, "Of course, I'll make that happen." And he goes, "Okay, well, the only thing is Dale," because Dale had played drums on some Honky stuff. He goes, "Dale's got to play drums in Honky." I was like, "Oh, yeah, what a problem that would be." "Okay, sure." Yeah, so I said yes. And then it turned out Jared from Carp and from Big Business, I'm a big fan of, he was having a baby around that time. And it was when Big Business was playing with Melvins. And so what it turned out was they wanted me to play bass for the Melvins and then also do Honky with Dale. And so they keep everything very much business minded, like you were saying. If you ain't playing, you're paying. Bobby was in the crew. He was guitar tech, and Honky played, and I played in both bands. Dale played in both bands. I mean, this is efficient as a business model.
There was Cody too, right? Cody.
Yeah, and Cody was playing, and so they went out there and then recorded some songs with them. Did that tour. Then I did. They parted ways with the Big Business guys for whatever reason they did, and then they asked me to do a 3-piece tour, and then they asked me to come back and do some more shows, and then Steven started playing with them, and then they asked me to come in and do double bass with them, which I had originally talked about, and so that finally happened, and so Pincus Abortion Technician happened. Hold It In happened before that, and that was with, I brought Paul on board, actually, to play on that one. And he plays on Bride of Krankenstein, the beautiful guitar solo is him.
Yeah, I
also brought him aboard on Pincus Abortion Technician, even though the other guys didn't know I did it. But I had Paul play a lead on that song, and they didn't know that Paul was on there, so he didn't even get credit on the album. But he's actually on both of those songs. Me and Paul are still really tight when it comes to playing and talking. We keep up with each other all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you just moved, but as you settled in, are you making music? Are you writing right now?
I ain't writing so much. I just finished the newest banjo record. The songs I wrote for the Butthole Surfers, like Paul put his out on Shumi Disc that's coming out through Joyful Noise. Kramer has talked to me about doing a June release, and I'm getting my stuff that was done for the Butthole Surfers. That I had originally written for that. I've been working on that for a while now, and I'm going to finish that up next after this banjo one. And so that's going to come out hopefully in June, and an unreleased Daddy Longhead record should be coming out around hopefully February. So I'm definitely keeping as busy as I can with not being able to play live shows.
Sure, sure. What about on the internet? Where can people find you on the internet, Jeff?
JDPincus.com is my website. Everything's linked together.
Let's spell that for people. JDPincus.com.
That's it, man. Okay. Yeah, and I'm also on Bandcamp under JD.
Yeah, Pincus. But you probably got links to all that stuff at your site.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I got a guy that helped me out, Paul Jensen, with Onama Media. Man, he is helped me map my way through that digital maze that I had no understanding of how to bring everything together from all your bands and all your sites. And I'm just telling any musician who's in that position, yeah, it will change your life to hook all of your stuff up and make a central hub out of your website. I had no idea how much business you can actually like expose yourself to by figuring that stuff out. It's all been a mystery to me for so long.
Someone once told me the future belongs to the efficient.
Yep. That's why I go fishing all the time.
Look, I'm curious. Your banjo records, where do you record them? At home?
Yeah, I record them at home. The first one, my friend Danny Barnes, who is an amazing banjo player. He's like my guru. He got just Steve Martin gave him $50,000 for banjo excellence out of the blue a couple of years ago. He wanted me to do a banjo record. He took that money and he wanted to do his own little label. And he liked my song, so he was the one that convinced me to do my first record. And it was so, it felt so good to me to be able to do something that was that personal. That I'm enjoying doing the second one right now. And you know, so it's kind of like, you know, when I die, people can go make coffee in the morning, and it will be like I'm sitting across the room from them in the kitchen playing a banjo song for them while they get ready for work, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful, Jeff.
It's kind of like something, it's very personal. You know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, well, from the heart, man, and I love it. And it's a big honor to have you on the show. When you get this other stuff coming out and stuff, you want to come back on the show, we can talk about it?
Love to, man. It's such a privilege and honor to be talking with you again, Mike. It's been way too long.
Okay.
And really love you and appreciate everything you've done. Appreciate what you're still doing. And fucking thanks for inspiring me for being the bass player I am, man. Call me a bass wrestler. Probably changed my life, man.
Bass wrestler, brother Jeff. Big love to you. People, it's been the January 22nd, 2021, the Dishwap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.